Hi, it's Connor Svensson here, founder and CEO at Web3 Labs. This is a conversation I had with Melanie Marsolier, Senior Product Manager for Blockchain at Splunk. Melanie's been immersed in Web3 since 2014 when she first came across Bitcoin and subsequently started working in Bitcoin startups before transitioning to being a technologist while she was at EY. She's since joined Splunk to drive their blockchain efforts. In our conversation, we cover the trends she's seen in the past 7 years in the space, mental models for assessing blockchain platforms, and what the future may hold with respect to Web3 network services, as well as fairer governance at a broader societal level. I really enjoyed hearing Melanie's views here, given her breadth of experience, and I'm sure you'll find some of her discussion points really interesting, as she's been doing this stuff for quite some time now. Hey, Melanie, it's absolutely great to have you here on the podcast today.
Hey, Connor, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting.
So I always like to start by asking the guests here about how they first got interested in Web3. What was it that first kind of caught their attention, and then how they went from having this interest in the technology to being involved in it kind of full time and really immersing themselves properly?
So this is going back in time for me, back to another life when I was a student. I studied at the London School of Economics. I did a master in management there. And I remember in 2014, I was writing my dissertation and someone else had chose Bitcoin as the topic for their dissertation. And I was not having a fun time with my dissertation, but I could tell that this guy was having the trouble of going through too many pages. He had like hundreds of pages because he was so passionate about the topic. And I was having the hardest time going to the next page type of thing. So that really rang a bell for me. And at the same time, in 2014, again, I had a friend from Canada who was very vocal on social media about how amazing her life was in San Francisco. Being in the Bitcoin space, she was posting pictures on sailboats with Richard Branson and on like some private islands and having the best life. And kind of like 1 + 1 equals 2 starts popping in my head. And I was like, you know what? I think that there's something there. It's interesting, at least. I should explore more. So in 2015, I moved to LA and connected with this friend, Victoria. She's retired now. She had a great time in the Bitcoin space. And she convinced me to join her startups. So that's how from 2014, first hearing about Bitcoin in a very significant manner, to 2015, joining full-time the space.
And so with those earlier roles, like you're working now at Splunk, which we'll of course talk about. But what were some of the different things that you did then in those years between, well, I guess the last 7 years?
Yeah, I did a couple of things. So the startup that I joined got hired by Airbnb in 2016 or actually 15. During my 9 months stay in the startup, the use case actually in hindsight wasn't probably the smartest one. It was using Bitcoin for micropayments, it kind of spoke to the maturity of the space. We had all of the biggest, VC in San Francisco. Pantera was the lead investors. There was a lot of traction for any use case that was pertaining to Bitcoin. So that was a good run. The Chainship project joined Airbnb in their payments team and kind of like pivoted away from cryptocurrencies. I was lucky enough to be able to join Ernst & Young, which was a customer of mine back when I was in London, who heard that I was doing cryptocurrencies. So I joined their team as employee number 2, number 3 in the EY blockchain team back in 2016, and had a great time there. Spent 4 or 5 years, started on the strategy side. So kind of evolving with the space, the space, I think, in between 2016 and 2017, was trying to understand, especially for enterprises, like what was a good use case or where should enterprises focus when exploring the blockchain space? Was it remittance? Was it, even like loyalties? What was the use case? So it was an iterative process through proof of concept. So proof of concept one, proof of concept eight, going back to the drawing board, not the right use case, proof of concept one, proof of concept seven, and then slowly going to production. And I think production use case for me as a consultant, I saw them happening around 2018. So around 2018, I was lucky enough to be sent back to school through EY sent me back to school to do engineering school. And then I came back as a software engineer working on open source protocol. Baseline was one of them. Nightfall, doing a bit of QA, doing a bit of smart contract, contributing as a product manager as well. And I think consulting is great, but there is such a thing as seeing a project to its kind of like version two or version three. And with consulting, it's kind of a bit of touch and go. So Spunk offered that to me. I have my own products. I see them from, in some of them inception to a couple of versions after. And also I inherited some very great products as well that I was able to at least refactor, bring some new features, and kind of make them my babies. So that's how I got into Spunk.
I think there's so much to unpack there, because you've been, I guess very active in the space since 2015, but also you've kind of, I guess your roles have transitioned as well. I think hearing is how you kind of went, you retrained in effect to do the kind of very hands-on technical track, having come from the kind of strategy and more consultative aspect of it. I'm sure you've got so many perspectives here that are very legitimate, because you've kind of seen both sides of the coin. You've seen the one that's maybe more on the kind of pure product without having to understand the intricacies of the actual execution of all this stuff, but then the execution stuff, because you've come from the development side as well there. So the first thing I guess I wanted to talk about a little bit more was just kind of how the trends, you've seen the trends change, because I know there's what everyone talks about, right? But as someone who's been on the ground since that point, where, as you said, there was a lot of interest in Bitcoin, it was all about Bitcoin sort of in 2014, 2015, because Ethereum was kind of on the horizon, but it didn't exist at that point. But take us back to that point and how you kind of saw the landscape evolve and how you saw companies kind of changing how they were perceiving it too.
Now that is my turn to give you the feedback that there's too much to unpack, because there's it feels like there's epochs, like there's like like the different worlds almost every year. It feels like if I looked at the top startups in 2014 in the blockchain space versus the top startups now, it's a world of difference. I would say the way that I rationalize all of that change in my mind is, I would say a good way to do it is through popular platforms. So I'm thinking like Bitcoin to Ethereum to now some layer twos and some like purpose-built blockchain. I think that is kind of the era that I'm seeing right now. So going per blockchain is a good way for me to, a good mental model for me to go through all of those transitions in the space, and how also like startups kind of like come and go, because as you have networks, for instance, for distributed compute or distributed storage purpose-built blockchain for NFTs, like the Flow blockchain, you kind of start understanding the space and who are the big actors and who does what in the space. My experience interacting with all of those change has been very good. I think the way that I've done the switches was all to start with white paper first, and then read the documentation for every platform. And then even if a project was kind of a use case within a platform, it was very important for me to understand the platform first and then go to the use case. And that's how it all started. I think the way that I was introduced to Bitcoin was my community saying, you gotta read this Satoshi Nakamoto white paper, you gotta. And then I read it and it was gibberish for me. I couldn't understand it, but it felt like I was back in my Catholic school days where I had to read the Bible and I didn't really understand what it was about, why it was important to me. But like, people were telling me, nah, you gotta read the Bible. And they had like stars in their eyes as they were talking about stuff. And that was Bitcoin to me at the beginning. And then I think it's only when I got the skills to understand the computer science or the of the nuts and bolts of Bitcoin. The first time that I read Mastering Bitcoin by Andreas, I forgot his last name.
Andrianopoulos.
Exactly. And Mastering Ethereum and being able to read the code and understand it, be able to wrap my head around the math. Then from that methodology or skeleton, it's very easy for me now to understand any EVM based blockchain. It's very, it's much easier for me to understand new protocols. So now, as hectic as the space can feel, it's easy for me to ingest, given that I now have the technical skills and I have, this methodology to like go through new platforms. Okay, what's the white paper? Let's read the documentation. Got it. I can understand the use cases now. Next. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And I think this idea of certainly a sort of, your approach, mental model for doing this is something that's very relevant here, and how you talk about having that technical grounding kind of made this a lot more accessible, the information there, because I think when people don't, it's like, it's almost too much, can be too much of a gap between the technology and its premise and what's proposed versus what's claimed to be possible with it all there. And I'm certainly interested to hear you, now that you've kind of been through the motions enough times over the years with these different platforms, no doubt with your work at Splunk, this is something that kind of ties in with all of it, because you're not just supporting one single platform. There's different blockchain platforms you're looking at, and I'm sure it applies there too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's how, as a product manager, I decide which platform to go next with, because some platforms are a bit too complex, are not worth the work to ingest the ledger data into Splunk at this stage. So triaging right now with like all those projects, and sometimes a project can be quite popular, or a platform can be quite popular, it would be too much of a headache to get into the ingest at this stage. So I would say on a weekly, I'm using those models.
And for those people who still find it quite confronting, just the sheer number of different projects that are out there and all of the different protocols that are popping up, I mean, I'm sure you can relate to, if we go back sort of 3-4 years ago, it was quite easy to keep up with what was happening, because there was a lot of the activity tended to be dominating on single blockchain platforms. But what advice do you give to people, especially if they're kind of more of a corporate mindset and they're just seeing all this stuff happening, and how to kind of zoom in and be able to focus on what's actually the right platforms to be looking at?
Oh, I might have an unpopular opinion here. I am a strong believer in public blockchains, and I know for enterprise use cases, it's a hard pill to swallow. So to me, the way that I'm trying to convince people to think this way is to look at the vision, right? And that perhaps, Ethereum or any given public blockchain that is, using proof of work and has proven to be quite decentralized and is trying to answer the promises of Web3, will be clunky, slow, not the best throughput. And yeah, can go to layer twos and kind of alleviate some of it, but there's a lot of trade-offs there, et cetera. And the transparency aspect to it, unless someone would use zero knowledge proof and would have a lot of trust in this, there's a bit of reluctancy at this stage for enterprises to use public blockchain. So that's why I like Quorum and Besu, because I think that it's a good sandbox to play with an infrastructure that when zero knowledge proof, when public blockchain meets a certain threshold, a certain metrics, and enterprises can have a certain confidence level into clearing their use case directly on public chains, they would be able to do the transition. So this is Melanie's personal opinion. This is not Splunk's view on the matter. And with that in mind, I think that any enterprise that is looking to where to sit their use case on which platform should just do a vision test, like what would their use case look like in 5 years if everything goes right, and like how the broader, like their target customers would interact with their infrastructure that is on chain, and from there kind of go back and find the platform that's gonna be able to at least enable that transition at some point, or that meets the requirements for now. Do the trade-off test.
And it's certainly one of those narratives that's been getting more and more momentum. And we spoke previously with Paul Brody, who you know no doubt know from your EY days, and he's another big proponent of the public Ethereum networks. And certainly from our perspective, I think what we've seen with especially the growth in DeFi and NFTs in the last, going back to the DeFi summer of 2020, and then NFTs being the hot thing in 2021. The kind of rate of innovation on these public blockchains has moved so fast. And so the people, even if they are looking at private permission chains, they're thinking, oh, why can't we use this technology in our networks here? And so it's kind of moving them towards platforms like Ethereum, because that's the rate of innovation is so high in the public networks.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more. With interoperability of certain chains, you don't have to go Ethereum mainnet right now. There's ways to choose the layer of your liking and start building there, or start with a permission blockchain like Quorum, Besu, and transition from there. So just different routes to the vision of Ethereum mainnet kind of being the enterprise playground too. But for now, I think that I totally agree with the metrics and the facts that it is hard right now to have a use case on mainnet. And it is painful, it is expensive, it is not exactly scalable. So I understand that it has to be seen for enterprises as a vision statement more than a actionable item in the near future.
And your point there, I think, about having this kind of 5-year type time horizon with respect to where you're looking is I think key to that as well, because it forces people to actually go beyond the here and now and really think more deeply about that. And so one of the other projects that I did want to touch on too, which I know you've been involved in, is the Baseline Protocol, which kind of ties in with this idea of being able to utilize public blockchain network technology, but in an enterprise-friendly way. And so what was it that pulled you into that initially?
Honestly, quality assurance. It was in my consultant days. It was about to go live soon, and we needed as many fingers to write some tests and QA the baseline protocol before its first release. So that's how I got in and wrote a couple of tests and I was getting pinged on the daily being like, oh, do you mind doing tests for this section, this section? Now, fast forward to today, I had much more experience understanding the business case of baseline, working with the provide team as well. Probably the most known implementation of baseline right now. And, you know, it's very interesting. I will say that I am looking forward to maybe like another version of the implementation. I think it's too soon for me to have like a strong opinion on the realization of the promise from baseline. I am trying to, through Splunk, do the visualization of a cycle in between baselined entities, but I haven't had the opportunity to complete that yet. So until I can Splunk it or can visualize it into Splunk, I think it's hard for me to be completely it's hard for me to advocate effectively for baseline. So I'm kind of having a wait and see approach. I'm very looking forward. I've actually got a couple of emails recently from the PRVD project. So it sounds like there's a lot of activity there. And then as soon as I get a green light and I hear, Mel, we're ready for you to Splunk it, to visualize everything into Splunk and do the baseline cycle in Splunk, I'll be the happiest. And then I'd be happy to come back to your podcast and tell you all about it, even maybe show you the visualization of it.
That'll be really cool to see. And certainly as someone who's been in the technology domain for a long time, I know who Splunk are, but I'm sure there's going to be lots of people who don't. And even the fact that you've got these expressions like, go and Splunk this, I think it'd be really great to give people a bit of a primer on who Splunk are and what they do before we kind of talk about why it's so relevant as well for Web3.
Splunk brings visibility into infrastructures. And the way that it started was ingesting machine logs back in the early or late 2000s, which was hard to make sense of, and be the platform to make sense of any kind of logs coming from any type of machine. And then it evolved over the years to be a security platform, a IT DevOps, favorite tool. So I would say that Splunk is well known in some ecosystems. So if you are an engineer that is obsessed with reliance, obsessed with performance, also security engineers, I think these are the target customers that normally would hear a bit more about Splunk. I think that my job as a product manager for Splunk blockchain is to kind of socialize or evangelize for the blockchain space that we are at a different stage where use case have to meet certain standards actually to entice enterprises in terms of performance metrics, in terms of uptime. And I think that that's where Splunk kind of comes in, where we're moving away from proof of concept and we are at the production stage where there are actually real world use case that depends on that infrastructure, blockchain infrastructure, for a business critical use case. So for everything that requires uptime and reliance, Splunk is normally where people would land in terms of visualization and querying data tool.
And it kind of covers stuff right the way from the, as you said, highly technical type stuff to being really very business focused type dashboards as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, you know Splunk as much as I do.
Well, I said it would have been about sort of eight, 9 years ago. I was dabbling with it a bit, but With Ethereum and some of the other blockchains, I know that Splunk, you have the you have sort of a blockchain offerings under the Splunk DLT banner. And so, what is Splunk DLT? Is that kind of the main part of it, or are there other things happening as well? Yeah, love to just hear a bit more on that.
Absolutely. So the Splunk blockchain team has connectors and apps, or releases connectors and apps. And for those who are not familiar with what are connectors and apps, connectors are a way to ingest blockchain data into Splunk. And once this data is Splunked, I mentioned Splunking something or Splunking it earlier. So Splunking something is once the data is ingested into Splunk, then you can perform very powerful queries. And those queries, we package them into apps. So first the connector, or connect for Ethereum, for instance. So you ingest the Ethereum ledger into Splunk, and then Splunk app for Ethereum, which would be making sense of that ledger data once it's in Splunk. And then example use cases would be, for instance, you know, understanding what is the yield for a DeFi pool or for an individual, address or an individual user entering and exiting a DeFi pool. That is a use case that is a bit complex and, for instance, hard to do with current tools like Dune Analytics. And with Splunk, with this language SPL, there's powerful queries that enable perfect visibility into these use cases. So the first step, once that ledger is ingested, most of the work is done, and then it's finding the app of your liking that will service the use case that you're trying to have visibility into. Through the Splunk app for Ethereum or Splunk app for Hyperledger or whichever chain you're dealing with.
And this whole kind of availability of different Web3 data, so to speak, for different protocols and so on, this is something that you've also got like a beta program for as well, now targeting different companies, which is recently announced, right?
Exactly. Thank you, Connor, for the opportunity to take time to talk a bit about it. Right now, we are in the beta phase of a SaaS offering or a managed services offering, where in my experience, my customers have had sometimes a hard time to have an archive node and a full node and maintaining these node at optimal uptime and just monitoring the performance of their nodes. Making sure that, for instance, if there were some issues, understanding if it was coming from their own infrastructure or sometimes the networks. So, for instance, sometimes there's downtime in the networks, or there could be some attacks. So, with that experience that Splunk has running Bitcoin node, Ethereum node, also layer two nodes like Gnosis, Polygon, and also testnet nodes, it makes a lot of sense for us to offer this as a managed services, where you can have a federated access, what I call federated access, so kind of a remote access to already indexed data into Splunk, and kind of out of the box apps as well that you can select and use to make sense, for instance, of this use case that I mentioned, for instance, understanding DeFi pool, interest rates, or whichever use case it is. And that beta program is free. The only thing that you need to do is send an email, "Hey, I'm interested," at blockchain@splunk.com. Blockchain, I'm probably sure that your viewers know how to spell it. And Splunk is splunk.com. And then blockchain@splunk.com, and I'll add you to the beta program.
And so one of the things I think that's so great about when, you know, established tech companies like Splunk, offer these sorts of services is it's kind of the recognition of this kind of tide of change that's coming with Web3. Now, I don't know if you were kind of at Splunk when they first decided to get with blockchain or if you were kind of, involved in that whole piece or not, but I'd love to kind of unpack a little bit more about what was kind of that inflection point that made them as a company realize we need to get involved with this stuff, because To me, it's just validation of the importance of Web3 when you have more and more companies to, doing these sorts of initiatives. And so, and there's still so many companies who aren't working with it or even experimenting. And so, yeah, I think it's important always to highlight the what are the motivations here, because you and me, you know, we are believers in the what's happening. But I think it's important to kind of set it as well from a more corporate perspective too.
And I get challenged on a yearly basis. I think Splunk, like any publicly traded company, has fiduciary duties to their investor to spend money wisely and expect handsome return on every dollar spent. So that test is applicable to any innovation team at Splunk, including the blockchain team. And that's the beauty of being a metric-focused company and a data-driven company. I also have to scan the market and give a fair assessment of the market opportunity, the rate of penetration in the market to my executives on a yearly basis. And I'm stress tested on those goals on a quarterly basis. So the short answer, Connor, is it is financially responsible for Splunk to pursue the Web3 market. I think that a lot of enterprises should do the same test and actually do the test of what can Web3 be for me, and if I accomplish this vision, what are the numbers that I can speak to my execs that would justify me pursuing this. And I think that the surprising thing will probably be that it's finally starting to make financial sense for a lot of companies to at least consider some of their stack to be decentralized. Case in point, I was actually having a conversation with a friend recently about when will I think that I'm in the future. And I remember I was saying, well, definitely that moment where my Tesla was driving me around and I was looking at my girlfriend and said, I think we're in the future. And I recently had that moment as well at Splunk, where a distributed storage company, I was pitching them in an hour-long meeting. And I was like, you know what? You should Splunk it. And 10 minutes in this hour-long meeting, they turned back to me and they were just like, you know what? You should use distributed storage. And now we're in a conversation where we're going to change part of our stack, at least for our customers, where Splunk customers will soon be able to use a decentralized storage provider to store their data that they're Splunking. So that to me was a moment where I was like, we're in the future, because finally Web3 is more than just a vision. It's more than a promise. It's something concrete. We're on par with like the industry leader for storage. This distributed offering meets it and it meets the requirements and is enterprise ready. And like, how nice of a feeling is this? I don't need to believe in Web3. I just need to look at the numbers. There's nothing. Obviously, there is a bit of magic to Web3, and that's why you and I are into it. But also, I think enterprises should feel readier to put real numbers to the opportunity and actually like assess it. And like, does it make business sense for me to pursue this opportunity or to do this, to replace my stack with this distributed offering, to build a product that is using a bit of Web3 in there, or that is Web3 focused, or that is powered by Web3? And I think that more and more, the answer is going to be yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great example there as well about where if organizations can actually realize tangible cost savings off the back of the technology, that's going to be what is such a wake-up call for so many of them when they start to realize those sorts of opportunities. And it's great to hear stories like that. So kind of zooming back out a bit more around Web3, what are kind of, apart from no doubt the data aspects of it, what are the areas of Web3 that you are kind of most excited about?
Governance. I think that living in the US, I definitely feel a crisis in our current system in the US. I feel like a lot of people are mad at or sad or some not that positive of emotions towards our institutions, and me included. And I think that it makes me think again.
Yeah, absolutely. The governance side is certainly something where you feel like there's the potential with Web3 for some really, you know, significant strides forwards and some great communities that are forming around it. But yeah, it's certainly none of this stuff is quick to actually happen. And in terms of the sort of broader adoption of Web3, I think it's fair to say that NFTs kind of crossed the chasm into mainstream last year, like all these brands and so on know what an NFT is. I think there's parts of DeFi where there's certainly awareness, but certainly cryptos are in the, you know, I guess mainstream consciousness. What other things do you think are kind of, we're close in terms of this sort of broader adoption?
I'm actually guilty of NFT, of this NFT craze. I minted for my customers, I think around 800 NFTs last week in Vegas. Splunk has this like yearly conference, it's called .conf, and we minted some Buttercup ponies. So the Splunk mascot is a pony. So we minted a lot of ponies in Vegas, and mine is red and has like some very rare attributes, and it's my image in Slack, and whenever I see my pony and wear my NFT, I'm like, this is unique and this is me and I minted it and I remember the moment where I minted it. So definitely part of that craze, and I think that it's cute, but also like it's more than cute. Like it also evangelizes blockchain to a lot of people. And, you know, at some point, NFTs are probably going to be a big part of the solution for supply chain on the blockchain and for some, you know, real world concrete. I see that with like some pause. I do feel like I am a blockchain first type of thing. And I feel like when there's reconciliation with off-chain and on-chain, it can be a bit messy. So I'm not sure about supply chain yet. But I do know that there's a lot of people working on it. And then the promise of the Web3, the next thing, I think, is networks. Networks providing utility or services. It's going to be, you know, the best use, immediate use of blockchain. I think that if we can leverage all the AI compute, all the idle storage, have a powerful network of oracles providing feeds of what is happening off chain, all of those networks that provide services to the broader community, I think either through oracles or either through like services like computer storage, it's kind of, we're on the edge of it. It's nowish. I almost feel like the momentum is finally producing a end case where it's ready for consumption soon. So I'm very excited about that.
That's just cool to hear about the network services, because it's certainly something that people aren't really, I don't think people are banging the drum about it too much yet, but at the same time, I can completely see that, like with the example you gave earlier of the decentralized data storage provider, it's like it's finding ways to make use of what's already being used and make it more accessible to others. And I guess also like what the Helium network's doing as well around, it offers there. And so just going back to the Buttercup ponies, was it?
Yeah.
How did people tend to respond to that in terms of, no doubt there would have been people at the conference who were maybe had NFTs, or they were kind of like, yeah, sign me up, I want my NFT here. But I guess there must have been quite a few people who it was like, this is their first interaction, or where they've had the opportunity to have an NFT as well. And what was kind of the response that you got from people there? Because I think that's kind of quite insightful as well, to see people's initial reactions when that's like the thing that brings them into Web3.
so cheerful, so happy. And I think like a lot of innovation start with games, with things that are cute, things that are pleasant, things that makes you giggle. And that was the whole experience. That we had a slot machine. So instead of like the typical like ancient slot machine, I did that movement. But technically it was a QR code on this machine. And then the machine would come to life and you would see like all of the attributes rotating until it locked into your unique pony. And then you would have also the pony visually sitting in your wallet, which was the conference app. And the ponies were extremely cute. Our design team did a fantastic job making them cute and lovely and sweet. And then looking at the attributes as well, the description of the attributes and like the rarity score, and being able to have that conversation with customers about like their whole experience, I think it was such a good introduction to blockchain for newcomers, because it was less about the technology, it was less about the scary stuff or the economics of it or the volatility of it or et cetera. The conversation started with, isn't this pony cute? Yes. Let's look at how rare is the eyes of your pony or the mane of your pony. And 10 minutes later, shaking hands and being like, this was a great experience. They know that they have an NFT in their wallet. If they want to learn more about blockchain, they can do it on their own time or on their own terms. But the experience would be enough. It was enough for me for Spawn customers to just mint their NFT, have a great time being exposed to, you know, the cute and magical things that gaming can be, or that, you know, having like a cute thing that is yours and that has unique traits, and learn about this and just go home and the experience being it and not being about more than that. So I would do it again. I think that my plan is probably to bring the Buttercup Pony to crypto conferences sometime in fall. We're actually creating a second machine just for redundancy and kind of polishing code base as well, because the crypto community is a bit more aware of exploitations and other stuff. So we just want to make sure that it's safe and secure. So who knows, maybe in the crypto conference there's be an introduction to Buttercup NFTs.
Good stuff. This idea as well of it makes me think about when people go to conferences and they pick up swag. You know, they might get like a fluffy toy that they bring back and give to one of their kids or something like that. And granted, kids probably don't appreciate, young kids anyway, won't appreciate the NFTs as much as like an older kid. But at the same time, you can kind of see how people would be perceiving these things, albeit in a digital format.
Mm-hmm.
So just to wrap up here today, if people want to reach out to you, are there any social platforms that you're active on, or you have like a preferred way of following the work that you're doing right now?
If you are a DeFi project, tokenomics related project, or tokenomics depending project, or NFT project, and you would love to learn more about visibility into your use case, I think the best way to reach me is, again, blockchain@splunk.com.
Well, Melanie, it's been an absolute pleasure to host you today on the podcast.
Connor, the pleasure definitely was mine. Thank you so much for inviting.
Oh, you're more than welcome. We'll speak again soon.
Speak again soon.
Hi, it's Connor Svensson here again. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm really excited to share with you that I've written a book, The Blockchain Innovator's Handbook, A Leader's Guide to Understanding, Adopting and Succeeding with this Disruptive Technology. I've been wanting to share my learnings about blockchain and Web3 for a number of years with a wider audience, and I'm really excited that I can do this now. This book covers everything from the fundamentals of the technology through to opportunity identification and implementation for your business to ensure that you can be one of the big beneficiaries of the wider transition to Web3 that's taking place now. The book is available in physical as well as digital form. For more information, head to web3labs.com/innovators.